this is your Polycast for Wednesday, September 28th, your daily check-in on Minnesota politics. I'm Mike Mulcahy in the Minnesota Public Radio newsroom. On today's edition, new numbers on campaign cash in Minnesota, and American Indians consider health and nutrition. The battle for control of Minnesota's legislature has already consumed many millions of dollars, and that will be augmented by millions more before Election Day. That means voters in areas with targeted races will be exposed to no shortage of mail, radio, and TV ads. New financial reports from candidates, political parties, and outside groups active in Minnesota's state House and Senate campaigns became public today. The reports show majority Senate Democrats had a wide cash advantage over Republicans. In the House, where Republicans are in the majority, the cash chase was closer, and bank balances were a mere $20,000 apart. House Democrats had more cash left on hand. That's not the whole story, though, because outside groups always loom large in legislative campaigns. Some have spent heavily already, and others are just gearing up to start spending on the campaign. A local human rights group has laid out a plan to address exploitation of immigrant and other local workers. The group says those workers may be robbed of their wages, forced to work under oppressive conditions, and sometimes even treated like virtual slaves. Martin Moylan has more.
The organization calling attention to worker exploitation. The Advocates for Human Rights says it's hard to measure the extent of the problem in Minnesota. Victims are typically afraid to come forward, but the group says its research suggests various forms of physical or financial abuse are pervasive problems, showing up among domestic workers, janitors, farmhands, and other workers who are often vulnerable. Michelle Garnett McKenzie is deputy director of the organization. She says the first step needed is to gather better information.
We need to better ID and measure the problem so that we know how to handle it, address victims, and ultimately prevent this from happening.
Garnett McKenzie says some workers are trapped in bad situations, perhaps fearing deportation because of their immigration status if they speak out. Or they feel there's nothing they can do when an employer doesn't pay them promised wages or otherwise mistreats them.
It is without question wrong for people to work without being free to leave, without being paid for what they are owed, to live in fear. That cannot happen here in our community, and it is, and we need to stop that.
In Woodbury, a woman was recently charged with beating and starving a woman she brought from China to work as a nanny. The woman accused denies the charges. Washington County is prosecuting the case. Assistant County Attorney Imran Ali says the county is looking at other possible cases.
This is a growing problem with widespread implications. It's not just Texas or California or Minneapolis or St. Paul. It's here in Washington County. It's everywhere.
That includes Minnesota farming communities. The U.S. Department of Labor's Wage and Hour Division and other regulators recently found a farmer in Foley, Minnesota, ripped off workers from the U.S. and Dominican Republic for hundreds of thousands of dollars. David King is district director of the division. He says the farmer failed to keep his promises about paying for transportation and labor.
The farmer charged for the transportation, failed to pay the agreed rate of pay, made illegal deductions from workers, and charged a recruitment fee per hour worked to these workers.
King said the farmer and his labor contractor were convicted of several crimes and are awaiting sentencing. Ali, the assistant Washington County attorney, says law enforcement authorities and prosecutors need to know how to recognize worker exploitation.
We have to focus on the places and the communities where those individuals are more vulnerable. And we have to look at crimes differently, not just as an assault, not just as a theft, but what they truly are. And that indeed is this human and labor trafficking.
The Advocates for Human Rights report makes a wide range of recommendations. They include raising awareness of labor trafficking and exploitation, encouraging and enabling victims to come forward without fear, and providing support services for them. The group says it's critical that exploited workers not be stopped from reporting crimes because they fear possible deportation. Martin Moylan, Minnesota Public Radio News.
Nutritionists and academics from across the country gathered at Prior Lake this week to address health disparities in Indian country. Too often, they say, Native American nutrition problems are a direct result of historical trauma. Diwali Saikautau has more.
Stepping away from a breakout session at the first annual conference on Native American nutrition, Ryan Bad Hartbull, a tall, fit man in a dark blue suit, says he's had a monumental experience.
It's been fascinating to learn the ways and the methods that other tribes have been using to provide better options for themselves.
He's a member of the Pine Ridge Reservation in South Dakota and is part Oglala and Hunkpapa Lakota. He's a new registered dietitian and says he's the first Native American to graduate from the U of M's dietetic internship program. Hartbull is in his early 30s and says this gathering is historic because it's part of a food movement to reclaim Native American health.
It's difficult to discuss nutrition in a Native setting, or I think in any setting, without discussing the issues that affect societies as a whole. It all goes back to the long history of genocide, oppression, assimilation that we faced as Native people.
And it's something he sees when he returns to Pine Ridge, some 600 miles west of Minneapolis.
Especially the young men, I go back and I always feel like I need to have my guard up, unfortunately, because I walk and I see the young men and they're angry, they're mad. And you can see, you know, the history of oppression, the history of pain and the racism that we have faced, and the alienation as well. I think if you're dealing with issues like this, these deep emotional scars, the last thing anyone cares about is what they're eating.
Take the time you need.
Facilitator Julie Nielsen is with the Minnesota Chippewa Tribe White Earth Nation. She's watching over conference attendees who are discussing where knowledge gaps are and what resources are needed.
The health disparities that our communities face are among the worst in the nation. So I've heard specific tribes talking about up to 20 to 50% of their tribal members experiencing type 2 diabetes and not having access to high quality, fresh and affordable produce so that they could feed themselves and nourish themselves in ways that will create health, not only for them, but within their families.
Speakers talked about food deserts on reservations, where the only grocery store near families might be a corner store with processed foods on the shelves. And off reservations, Native Americans tend to live in poor communities with fast food restaurants, where dollar menus are readily accessible and unhealthy.
Our people have traditionally known how to eat, and it was only through the disruption of moving communities that we lost those ways, that we lost the land. We've been sort of segregated into resource-poor geographies where traditionally we had what we needed and we used it responsibly.
Organizers of this conference say this sold-out two-day meeting is the first of its kind. Lori Watso is chair of Seeds of Native Health, the Prior Lake nonprofit that helped sponsor the conference, along with the U of M's Healthy Foods, Healthy Lives Institute.
Bridge the gap, the long-existing gap between indigenous wisdom and academic knowledge or academic research.
Her group has just released a new report sharing Native-led initiatives that seek solutions to preventable diet-related diseases affecting elders and especially Native American youth. If current trends continue, she says, those youth may have shorter lifespan than their parents.
However, I'm very optimistic, and it lies in our young people. They said that we need to make changes, our Native communities need to make changes in our policies, and let's start with our powwows, for example. Maybe we shouldn't have the kinds of foods that we have at our powwows now, things like fry bread, which are not, it's not a traditional food.
Native people are leading this food movement, she adds, for the future and survival of their tribes. Dwahli Saikautau, Minnesota Public Radio News, Prior Lake.
And that's your Polycast for this Wednesday, your daily check-in on Minnesota politics. I'm Mike Mulcahy in the Minnesota Public Radio Newsroom.